Welcome to Fallen Heroes, a novel written by Barry Nugent and narrated by David Ault. Chapter 7. Luther was not surprised to find the media vultures already circling as he drove up to the main gates. Several television stations were already running live broadcasts from their vans. Cameramen were jostling for the best position to zoom in on the murder house. There were four policemen at the entrance gate, who were being hounded by reporters, no doubt trying to gain access to the grounds. Nothing like a good murder to bring out the best in the press, Luther concluded. Even in death, there was no dignity for the victims, no escape from the media's obsession with relating every gory detail to an audience who thrived on such grisly affairs. Luther did not bother opening the car window as he stopped in front of the gates, giving the media the exact measure of respect he believed they deserved. A battalion of reporters descended on his car. All the questions, demands, and accusations aimed at Luther were lost in a flurry of garbled words and shouting. Luther beeped the car's horn twice while ignoring the fists being pounded against his window. Upon catching sight of the United Nations identity sticker plastered to the windshield, a policeman wasted no time in activating the gate mechanism, whilst his colleagues fought to clear a path for the car through the press. Pulling up alongside the policeman, Luther pressed a button by the gear stick and the window on the driver's side slid downwards. He flashed a grin at the policeman, together with his torch security identification. The dark-haired police officer, obviously eager to please, offered Luther a crisp salute. "No need for that, officer," said Luther. "Has Dr. Monroe arrived?"
"Oui, monsieur," said the young officer cheerily. "As per your orders, she has been given full access to the crime scene."
Only a rookie could look that happy about being here. The joys of ignorance, mused Luther, as he shifted the gear stick into first. He felt sorry for the young officer, because one day that easygoing manner would be replaced by a sarcastic, almost fatalistic view of the job he performed. The price of justice was always hardest on those who fought to uphold it. "Make sure none of these distinguished members of the press get into the grounds," Luther told the officer. "If they do, you have my permission to shoot on sight." The policeman seemed unsure how to take the command. "Just kidding," said Luther, not holding out much hope for the young man's future in law enforcement. Leaving the officers to deal with the mass of reporters, Luther drove up the path towards the darkened house. In the distance, he saw the camera flashes from the forensic team and the luminous outline of yellow police tape. There was nothing like visiting a murder scene in the pouring rain at 4:30 in the morning to reaffirm one's belief in the human race. Luther stopped the car and got out. As he ducked under the tape, he caught his first glimpse of Catherine. She was crouched beside two corpses mutilated beyond recognition. Next to her stood a policeman who was attempting to shield her from the rain with an umbrella. Not being waif-thin, some would describe Catherine as bordering on overweight. Not that it mattered. She looked good for it, in Luther's opinion. She wore a baggy, dark blue hooded fleece top and jeans, which, like her trainer, were covered in mud and grass. Luther was glad to see her taste in clothing had not changed. When she'd worked with Luther at Torch, she'd always opted for a more casual dress code, despite disapproving glances from her superiors. Luther knew he should say something, but he could tell she was engrossed in her work. "Are you actually going to say hello, or are you just going to carry on staring at my ass?" Catherine turned away from the corpses, got to her feet and walked over to Luther. She cocked her head to one side. Luther noted the blonde and copper highlights that streaked her dark brown hair. They were new. Luther remembered how it usually took her a couple of weeks before she decided she was bored and wanted a change. "Hi, Sir Lancelot. Long time," she said, brushing some of her hair to one side, revealing a pair of large and inquisitive brown eyes. Luther stiffened at the name. "I thought you might have grown out of calling me that."
"What? And miss winding you up? Never."
Even though she was a well-respected authority in the fields of criminal psychology and behavioural studies, Catherine still liked to get her kicks from pushing people's buttons and watching their reactions. "Been here long?" Catherine shrugged, stuffing her hands into her pockets. "Long enough to know you're late as usual. I wonder if you'll even understand the concept of timekeeping."
"Yeah, I know, you're sorry," said Catherine.
"Don't worry about it. I didn't expect you to have changed that much in 3 years." She gave Luther a quick sideways look that he remembered from old. The reunion was over. It was time to get to work. He turned to the officer holding the umbrella, sneaking a quick look at his badge to get a name. "Sergeant Bernice, why don't you head off home? We can take it from here."
"Very good, monsieur," said Bernice, saluting and then setting off down the path.
Once Bernice was out of earshot, Luther and Catherine headed back to the corpses. Luther tried to hide the horror and repulsion at what he saw. He'd never been very good at crime scenes. The jagged scar at the base of his skull was a constant reminder of that fact. He had received the wound after his head struck a chair when he fainted during his first autopsy.
"Not a pretty sight," said Catherine, who was now kneeling beside him. "We need to be quick. The coroners have already taken the bodies from the house."
"What have you got?"
"Forensics will give us a full report once they get back to the lab."
Catherine pointed at the corpses. "These two were found by their backup unit, who were covering the rear of the house at the time of the murders. According to their statements, they radioed for help after hearing screams and gunshots from inside the house. Their superiors contacted the police whilst they entered the building after finding their mates here cut to pieces. They found John and Mary Carson dead in the upstairs room."
"Time of death on these two?"
"No confirmation on that yet, but the coroner reckons that it might have been a matter of minutes before they were found." The implications of Catherine's statement were not lost on Luther.
"Minutes," he said, more to himself than anyone else.
"And the backup unit saw no one when they got round to the front of the house."
Catherine shook her head.
"But that's impossible," finished Catherine. She twisted round and gestured to the gates, where there was still a mass of reporters. "I spoke to the backup team. They said there was no way anyone could have approached the house without being seen or heard."
"Well, someone managed it," said Luther.
"Got any history on these two?" "Both were ex-military," said Catherine. "Not the sort of guys you just sneak up on."
"What's your impression?"
"That someone approached two highly trained soldiers face on across open ground and killed them both before they could get off a shot or call for help."
"Unlikely?"
"Very," said Catherine, her face becoming pale and ashen.
"Hey, it's okay," said Luther, placing a hand on her shoulder. "Do you want to take a breather?"
Saying nothing in response to the question, Catherine set off for the darkened house. Luther gestured to the nearby coroner's assistant that it was okay to move the bodies before heading up to the entrance himself. Catherine stared at the gaping entranceway to the house and the flight of steps leading up to the second floor. She was breathing heavily, desperately trying to suppress the impending panic attack. "You can do this. You can do this." She repeated the words over and over again in her mind, trying to believe them. To Catherine, fear was an entity that could be both felt and seen. Staring into the darkness ahead, she shuddered, sensing the fear around her clawing at her soul. She sensed its desperation, its need to crawl inside her, casting horrific images of what awaited her. She bit down hard on her bottom lip until she tasted blood on her tongue. A spasm of pain followed, but instead of allowing it to subside, she clung to it, anchoring her mind to the sensation. Pain was good. It gave her focus. She imagined what it must have felt like to have ripped two human beings apart, to have feasted on their fears as their lives ebbed away. The last time had been 3 years ago. She was more focused back then, more in control of her emotions, able to channel the horror, to use it. She wished she'd never heard the phone. Luther should never have asked her to do this.
"You don't have to do this," said Luther.
Catherine did not turn her head when she spoke, her eyes staring straight ahead. She gradually raised her hands, examining each of them in turn. "Their blood washes over me, through me." She spoke softly, but there was a menace behind each word. "No matter. I wear it like a cloak. It warms me as it did them. I remove their foulness from my fingers." Catherine began to rub her hands together over the spot where, according to the information she had, pieces of what was thought to be human skin were found. She told herself that all she was doing was role-playing the murders, using the information. The knowledge gave her little comfort. The stench of evil was a lot harder to remove once you were stained with it.
She wiped her right hand across her mouth, revealing a thin smile. I was right. Their blood tastes warm. She ran a finger down the side of her neck. They lay there saying nothing. They should thank me for what I have done. What have you done? I don't know, said Catherine, sounding more like herself. But I do know he gutted them like this for a reason. He? Whoever did this was male. But Catherine was already moving again further into the gloomy and silent house. Luther pulled on a pair of latex gloves and took out his flashlight. Catherine placed her hand over it. No light. Not yet. She set off down the hallway, casting her eyes over the framed certificates lining the walls, all of which had been smashed. They were all for John Carson, all a trail of successes, moments of glory frozen in time. Fool. Catherine's voice becoming deeper, more guttural as she slipped into character. I do not need to show others my success. I am beyond pride, beyond vanity. Catherine wondered how many of the destructive thoughts she had were from the killers she sought to understand, and how many from her own fractured psyche. You disgust me. The only gift I can offer you now is oblivion. Catherine stopped and stared, open-mouthed. Luther came up behind her, this time turning on his flashlight. My God. Along the wall, illuminated by the flashlight, were several shapes and symbols scrawled in blood. Catherine pulled a small digital camera from her pocket and snapped off a few shots. Are these symbols occult? Asked Luther. Catherine nodded. I don't want to speculate until I've consulted my research, but they look familiar. I just can't place where I've seen them before. Once we've been upstairs, I'll come back and take a better look and see if something jogs my memory. Together they walked to the foot of the stairs. Catherine started to walk up to the first floor. She was halfway up when she stopped, turned, and stared at the open door. You okay? Said Luther from behind. Something doesn't feel right about this place. It's not supposed to. Come on, let's get this over with. Making up his mind not to dwell on his unease, Luther followed Catherine up to the first floor. Neither of them heard the faint laughter that faded into the night as the rain outside grew louder. That was Chapter 7 of Fallen Heroes. Thanks for listening.